Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, Mayor de Blasio coming up at 10:30. First, Ozzie Pabra of Capital New York, the New York politics and media website. Hi, Ozzie. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks for having me.
And we'll talk to the mayor largely about his education speech yesterday at Riverside Church, in which he surprised a lot of people by saying he blew it on communicating his charter school policy a few weeks ago. Here's a clip in which he promises to find a location for the kids at one of the Eva Moskowitz charter schools, known as Success Academies, who he had denied co-location to, that is, location in a regular school building where special ed kids are also educated.
There's a charter school with 194 children. It's a good school doing good work, and we are going to make sure those 194 children have a good home this year. But we will not do it at the expense of our special education children. And that false choice has been set up as part of a broken system and a broken dialogue. And it's time to start ending that kind of dysfunction. Not pitting one against another. Not somehow allowing the education discourse to be the place where we're least civil, least sane, least generous. So we'll protect the children who need our help while not pitting one against another.
Mayor de Blasio yesterday at Riverside Church. Ozzie, what do you make of his softer tone?
Well, the tone was different, but not really the substance of what he was doing. And it's very easy for a lawmaker to say, I chose the wrong words, my speech wasn't crafted as well as it should. But to change course on policy is a little bit different, and that's not exactly what he's doing. He's always said he supports charter schools where he can. He's always said that he doesn't want to pit one group of students against another, and that's very much what he was saying today. What was different was the tone. He didn't single out Eva Moskowitz, which he liked to do on the campaign trail. He didn't even name the Harlem Success Academy. He just referred to it by the number as if we all don't know what he's talking about.
That 194 students that
right.
he referenced there.
Right. So,
but at the same time, I thought I heard maybe a new development in what he's promising those kids whose school got denied their co-location, because I think he and Chancellor Farinha have said earlier that they would try to find them another home. And here I think he said, we will find them another home. And I wonder if there was more of a lockdown, a rock-solid promise being made in that speech yesterday. Was that a nuance worth taking?
It's always worth taking, but when he started to backtrack earlier and say – and when Carmen Farinha had said we're going to work with them to find a place, I sort of thought we were going to get to this day at some point. Remember, she had already changed her position from earlier saying
right.
they're on their own.
Right.
So we've seen this development, but now he gets to underscore it in a major speech. And the point of a speech like this is to get news stories like the ones we saw in the papers today, saying the tone is different.
Do you think there's some kind of grand bargain with the governor behind the scenes here to soften on charter schools, which the governor very vocally supports, in exchange for a pre-K funding deal?
It's possible because they both can walk away with something that they want. They both can look like winners, which is exactly what you need when you have a governor and a mayor in a fight. You need to be able to walk away and both claim victory. I don't know if it was an exact backroom deal, give me this and I'll give you that. They hadn't met for 2 hours when the mayor was up in Albany, and really we don't know what came out of it. But when you see things like this, everything is possible.
When was that meeting?
It was when the mayor, I believe, was last up in Albany.
So like early last week or so?
Right. I think it was on the day of those two dueling rallies.
Oh.
So reporters were standing outside the door. And as opposed to a 5-minute meet and greet or a half hour, how's it going? It was 2 hours, and the mayor came out by himself without an announcement.
And that was the day where all the press coverage was that the governor decided to upstage Mayor de Blasio. Here he was coming to Albany with about 1,000 people rallying for universal pre-K funding.
Right.
And there was Eva Moskowitz leading many thousands of people, or it's been estimated 7,000 to 11,000
right.
people, whatever the real number is. She had a lot more people than de Blasio had. And what does the governor do? I think unexpected in some circles. He comes and makes this unambiguous, shouting to rally the crowd, declaration of his, you know, support for charter schools, and completely upstages de Blasio. I wonder what that meeting between the two of them was like that day, considering those theatrics.
There was a lot of reporters standing outside the door, and if there was yelling and shouting, it didn't carry over into the hallway. So
there has been this huge advertising campaign. A lot of our listeners have seen it, with a lot of hedge fund or private equity money behind it, bashing the mayor on his charter school co-locations denials. Are charter schools a kind of proxy fight, like the revenge of the 1% against de Blasio's Tale of Two Cities campaign?
I believe you could see it that way. A lot of the people who supported charter schools, but not exclusively that same group, were the people who were against his very progressive agenda. The teachers union is very much in support of Mayor de Blasio and what he's trying to do in terms of his education agenda. The mayor is now talking about needing to restart that conversation to have longer school days, longer school years, and those really get at the heart of what are in the teachers union contracts and some of the work rules. He didn't stress that as much during the campaign. The campaign was largely focused on charter schools, Eva Moskowitz, why are they getting free rent? So when he singled her out again, she was able very quickly to turn to her supporters, raise a lot of money, and pour that into ads at a time when the mayor was not actively putting forward his message in the same way in paid advertising. So you saw a drubbing from the snowstorms, from his bad coverage in the press for his showing up late, not having finished his mayoral appointments. And then you have this onslaught of ads, these kids saying, we're going to be displaced because of the mayor. It was a very, very effective campaign ad. And then the original headline on the Times story last night about his speech, it referenced that he had an eye towards his polling when he changed his tone. So there was something very effective that was happening with Eva Moskowitz's group.
So the people who had money to throw behind advertisements that criticized the mayor for stealing these kids' futures was having an impact out there, presumably.
Right. There seemed to be a recognition at some point that this polling that the mayor says is not important, this is just a day-to-day snapshot, there was a sense that it was having an effect, because once he starts losing ground, it's hard for him to then turn around to Albany and to a governor and say, I have a mandate. I represent the people. It's hard to do that when there are a flood of stories saying you're not really popular.
Ozzie Pabra from Capital New York, Mayor de Blasio coming up on all of this in 5 minutes. And Paul in the Bronx, you're on WNYC. Hello, Paul.
Hi. How are you doing?
Good.
Good. I had a question in terms of how the mayor might be able to sort of bridge the gap between general public schools and charter schools. I often think of the charter schools as laboratories for education. And is there a way that the mayor could kind of utilize the best practices within the charter schools and build a conversation between them so that they can work cooperatively and incorporate those?
It's a really great question. Really great question. Thank you. And in fact, the mayor referenced that in the speech yesterday. He did it in a way that also took a shot at charter schools. He said they're supposed to be laboratories of innovation.
Right.
That the regular public schools can learn from. They're not supposed to be pitted against regular charter schools and get special treatment, however he put it. But I will ask him a version of Paul's question when he comes on in a few minutes, because let's face it, the Eva Moskowitz charter schools, no matter what one may think of her sharp elbowed techniques or what she gets paid or anything, they got better test scores than the regular public schools or than other charter schools. So if there's a charter school you want to say is working, if you consider the statewide standardized tests as a valid measure,
right,
then you got to point to those and say, what can we learn, right?
Right. There are a number of organizations that run charter schools, including, I believe, the UFT. And Moskowitz's does better than all of them. So at some point, the conversation moves away from co-locations to what are they doing in those schools and why are those schools more effective? There's critical stories about cherry-picking students, kicking students out for disruptive behavior. But at some point, those teachers are putting in, arguably, longer hours, a different kind of curriculum, and the scores are better. Why that's happening there and not being scaled up as they're supposed to be when there's a successful program, is the question for the mayor.
Karen in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Karen.
Good morning. I was just wondering that what would have happened if the Eva Moskowitz supporters had, instead of using their monies for advertisements against the mayor's policy, if they had contributed that money to improve the supplies and the building facilities of the general public school population. It would have been helpful, and those kids would have had a better opportunity also to improve.
Karen, thank you. I appreciate the question. I think to give them as much earnest respect as possible, what the funders of those ads would say, you know, the most serious-minded of them, is that throwing a few extra thousand or even million dollars into extra supplies for the public schools this year is going to do less for kids in the long run than working through the policy system to change education so that there's more opportunity for charters with more innovation, for more pressure on the public schools to improve, et cetera, et cetera.
And as the governor likes to say, adding more money to that problem doesn't always solve it.
On a lighter note, just before the mayor comes on,
yes.
He took part Saturday night in his first Inner Circle show. Now, for those of you who don't happen to be members of the Inner Circle, the New York City Press Corps and the administration, this is the annual comedy production done with members of the City Hall Press Corps. And we're going to hear a clip here where it's a fake Jeopardy skit. And Bill de Blasio and Al Sharpton are competing against each other.
Mr. Mayor, you control the board.
I'll take politics for 100.
Here's the clue. Stop and frisk. Mayor.
What is a racially discriminatory policy?
I'm sorry, wrong. Reverend.
What was another way Chris Christie planned to slow traffic on the George Washington Bridge?
That's correct. You control the board, Reverend.
Oh, they got a Chris Christie Bridgegate scandal thing in there.
That was required, I believe, for a Democratic mayor's performance this year.
Traffic study. Was the mayor, who some of his harshest critics have called humor-challenged, was Mayor de Blasio funny?
I would say that he was funny, and at moments he was unintentionally funny. There were a series of skits that portrayed him as a working-class guy. He portrayed Ralph Kranzem in The Honeymooners with his wife, Shirlane McRae, which was pretty funny. There was a wonderful monologue from an actress portraying the grievances of the Upper East Side that was, I think, the highlight of the show. But
about the snow plowing?
About the snow plowing, about wanting a moat around the neighborhood. And their first non-negotiable demand of the new mayor was that he resign. And I thought that sort of crystallized the humorous view of what kind of reception he gets.
Of what a certain percentage of the 1%
exactly
would like to see from Mayor Bill de Blasio. He has had testy relationships with the press so far.
Does
doing Inner Circle ease them at all for the sake of getting, you know, what we would consider the most important thing, which is getting public information out of City Hall and real answers from him at news conferences, which hasn't always been the case? Or do you think maybe the whole thing is just inappropriate for the press to be cozying up to the mayor like this? The Times doesn't even allow its people to take part.
I don't dismiss that criticism. I participate in the Inner Circle. I've done it for a number of years. But there are people who say, I don't want to be cozy like that with someone I am covering. There was a photograph of the mayor who had done a selfie with a number of reporters down at City Hall. I wasn't there. And to be very honest, I don't know what I would have done if he pulled out his camera phone to take that picture. So I don't discredit anyone who has an objection about participating in this. Although I do believe that the reporters who are in that show are some of the strongest and toughest on the mayor. And the attempt to get better coverage out of this is the game that happens 365 days a year. The mayor is always trying to get better coverage. Reporters are always trying to get better stories. And if there's a night where everyone can come together and sort of make fun of that effort, I don't think that's so bad. Lord knows in Washington, that kind of effort happens all the time.
Right. The difference between the White House Correspondents' Dinner, mm-hmm. and we always hear clips in the news of the comedy sketch, whoever the comic is they hire that time, is that the president and the press don't actually work on it together. And they're just both in the audience. So, you know, I don't know. The Times draws the line there, and everybody can make their own conclusions. Ozzie Paber from Capital New York, thanks a lot.
Thanks.